You're Rick, right? I'm Negan.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Journey into Comics, a podcast about comic books, video games, movies, television, and everything nerd, with your hosts, Nate Phillips, Brandon Stone, and Shuddy Boy.
You know, you're one bad day away from being me.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Journey into Comics. I'm your host, Nate Phillips. Today, joining me inside of one of the bathroom stalls of the Borg Cube, I think that's the right reference, my co-host, it's Brando. What's up, buddy?
I would whisper, but there's no point in whispering with the Borg, so okay. They just don't know I'm here.
Okay, good. I don't know really jack shit about Star Trek, to be quite honest.
It's a shame. That is a giant shame.
I want to watch it. I mean, anytime I've ever seen it, I liked it. My cousins liked it. I just never jumped into it. It's nothing like, I promise, I know a lot of people go, oh, it's because you like Star Wars so fucking much, and you don't want to be one of the, you know, like, you can like both, in my opinion. I just never jumped to Star Trek, so hopefully
that... I will say that, you know, and this might be blasphemous, but I find it difficult to get into the original series now for some reason. I feel like it was a different era, so the acting is not... It's not so much the look or even, like, the special effects for the time. I can get past that. It's sort of like the acting's a little stale. At the time, it was perfectly acceptable, but it's a little bit down now, like... As the series goes on, I'm sure it gets better, but starting off with any show, it's the actor's a little bit timid, I guess. And, you know, it's all right. I can watch it, but that's not what hooked me, you know? Definitely watching the 09 movie got me back into it, because as a kid, I watched Next Generation and Deep Space Nine and stuff like that, but I didn't, like, really get into it. And then after seeing the 09 movie, it reinvigorated my interest, and I went back and watched the entire Next Generation series, which is a must for any nerd, not even for a Star Trek fan. For, like, if you're a nerd, you should watch that entire 7-season run. It is immaculate.
Man, you've got me, like I'm probably going to do that, Brando, like, to be quite honest. I've been looking for something new to watch. Maybe it's time I get into the Next Generation. It seems like you're mentioning this, and I want to kind of bring this back around. It seemed like you were saying that, you know, like the original Shatner era, you know, George Takei era Star Trek was a little campy, right?
Well, no. Like, and of course it's campy. Star Trek is a little campy. Sci-fi is campy.
And that's what I was going to say is, like, that's how I feel about old Doctor Who. I appreciate it because it's old Doctor Who, and you're like, man, this is where, like, the roots of this character are from, but it is not my favorite to watch. I like watching the newer stuff that's got really great acting and really, really, really dense, fulfilling storytelling, you know, and that's what I'm all about. So, speaking of dense storytelling, do you have something else to add?
Yes, I
do. Go ahead, sorry.
Because I don't want this to be left unsaid. The original series cast movies... some of those are absolutely fantastic. Wrath of Khan is one of the best movies I've ever seen.
Wow, high praise.
And Star Trek IV is a completely different movie, but still great. It's almost like it's kind of a comedy.
Okay.
And it's just a different setting. There are some great stuff in there. And then, as I said, with the original acting, it's a bit timid, which was pretty much... You know, it's 1960s television, and they're trying to do serious, you know, sci-fi. You know, when you see the movies, and it's been like 10 years, 12 years after the original series ended, these actors have grown bonds. That, I feel like should be the theme of Star Trek, is bonds. Because then I feel that with TNG as well. First couple seasons are a little maybe not, I don't want to say too slow, but prodding, and maybe the characters are like a little bit more stiffer around each other. But as the series goes on, you can definitely tell that there's a kinship and friendship, not only between the characters, but between the actors. So it's a lot more fun to watch.
Awesome. Well, I'm definitely looking forward to venturing into that. Like I said, and it's funny you said talking about the movies, because I liked the Star Trek movies. Absolutely. J.J. Abrams did a phenomenal job with the first two. And interesting, we're talking about this today, right out the gate, and this isn't even on our notes. Today or yesterday or sometime this past week, they released a picture from Star Trek Beyond.
Did they really? I missed it.
Yeah, and I'm not. Like I said, I don't know anything about any of the characters, so it might be something, you know, earth-shattering to people that actually know that universe. But I'm just like, oh, it looks cool. I'm excited to see it. I don't know what it's about. You know, I'm like, I guess I'm kind of like, what do you call that? I can't think of the word, Brandon.
Well, it is 420.
Hey, no. That's not what I'm saying. No, I'm just like, I get to like be very, very, very naive going into the Star Trek movies. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know that universe. So going into anytime I get to see these new movies, and of course that's probably going to change now because I'm sure the next generation is going to fill me in with a lot of detailed information about this universe. So
it'll fill you in for more overall information. It won't necessarily change your perception of the new movies at all because they're not because the new movies are like alternate reality original series.
Okay.
And basically, what I would suggest you do: you've seen Into Darkness.
Yeah.
You need to watch Wrath of Khan because they pretty much flipped Wrath of Khan on its head and did something different with it.
Oh, cool.
And did Into Darkness, and it'll make you appreciate both movies. I mean, as soon as you see stuff in Wrath of Khan, of course, that has the infamous Khan,
yeah,
you know, line. But you'll definitely appreciate Into Darkness. You'll even appreciate the stuff that you see in Wrath of Khan and go, oh, cool. This is something that has survived years, and they sort of touched upon again in like the newer one.
Well, you're speaking of darkness. Let's continue talking about the darkness to actually bring up our first official topic of the show today. Let's real quick throw a little shout out. Ben Krieger. I always fuck that up. I always feel terrible when I fuck
the
it
Krieger?
Up. Too. I think it's Krieger. I think it is Krieger. Long I sound. And Ed Ellsworth, they were on our last episode, and it is official. Their Kickstarter has launched.
And yesterday, right?
Yeah, they launched yesterday, which was my birthday, for those of you who don't know.
And happy birthday.
Well, thank you, man. You already wished me a happy birthday, but I appreciate doing so on air. That's really nice of you. But it launched yesterday. I want to say they're already at like 25% of their goal.
Really? That's awesome.
And they're on like their top 10 for up and coming in the comic section of Kickstarter. And they're also top 10 in news and noteworthy, I think. Which is another different section for Kickstarter, so they're getting some exposure. People are definitely checking it out, and right now they're saying if they continue to trend how they are now, they'll reach $19,000 by the time that, and that would most likely fund the majority of the series, or you know, a good portion of it, I would assume.
That's awesome. I mean, of course, we had them on the show before, like last summer around August, I think.
Yeah. I had Ben on. He was nice.
And then, and of course, I think they fell short with the original. And I'm glad to know that, you know, they didn't just give up. They kind of went back. They tried again. And I really enjoyed listening more. I mean, having Ed on was really cool because we got to hear a bit more about, you know, what this is all about.
Yeah, and absolutely.
It kind of, I mean, not to say that before, like that it wasn't, but I kind of feel like having more information, like I made it more hyped, made it maybe give it a little bit more oomph to help reach its goal. And I really hope it does. It sounds like a really cool concept.
Yeah. And I don't know if I can, man, I actually don't know if I can talk about this, but you know what? It's turning into comics and fuck it. There are no rules. So I'm going to break the fourth wall a little bit and fill you guys in on a little connection that happened because of the show Journey into Comics. And Brando, I think I told you this off air, but just to retell the story in a little bit of better detail, the guys were on and we were talking and we talked about, at one point I mentioned that I had got the Power Ranger like 8-bit variant or something. I don't know why that got brought up, but we were talking about it. And that might have been in private conversation. That doesn't matter. So I sent him a picture of this cover of the 8-bit thing, which I ordered at your house during WrestleMania weekend, by the way, Brando.
Oh.
And he's like, wow, that's really neat. And I was like, oh, well, that's interesting. The guy who does these 8-bit covers, Matthew Waite, we kind of know him Coincidentally enough, I knew him through the Northwest Indiana Comic Con, and then we unintentionally stole a piece of his artwork for the header of the Journey into Comics Facebook for a time. And then he liked it, and then I messaged him, and I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. That was just a total bonehead move. I didn't even think to look to see what kind of artist did it. I just assumed, you know, it was something that was, you know, people fucking around. So long story short, I made the interaction or the connection with Ben and Matthew Waite, and it seems that if Black Suit of Death gets funded, he's doing an 8-bit cover for them.
That's sweet.
So I was like, yes, like this has to happen. Ben really liked the work, so I was like, well, I mean, I got to try at least, you know. So.
Hell yeah.
Now, next episode, which Brandon, you're going to be in my neck of the woods for.
Yes, I am.
Crazy, right? I mean, and it kind of worked out beautifully because I wanted to have these guys on. Their Kickstarter is kind of coming to an end, and I feel like this is kind of similar to how Black Suit of Death happened, where I found another thing that's awesome, and I really like the idea behind this this book that these guys are doing, but they're towards the end of their run, and I'm hoping that they don't give up and they kind of regroup and then try a second time if they don't make their goal. I hope they actually hit their goal, though. But we're going to have a couple guests on, and you get to be with me with guests that we're going to be interviewing and talking about a book, and that's going to be the first time we've ever been able to actually do that.
Yeah, it's always been like a timing issue, and especially now with the little one that is not in his own bed yet, that is a big issue because, you know, for me, until we get him in his own bed, bedtime starts at like 9. Now that we're in bed, but it's like we're starting the process.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have our process down, and when we push it, especially on a work night, it kind of sucks. So I'm glad that I'm going to be able to do it. It does suck that it is a bit towards the end and we didn't make this connection sooner. But I'm really happy to be able to get on and talk to these guys about this book. It seems like a really cool idea. You sent me the link. I checked it out. Another weird little coincidence, and it's not exactly to the date, but last year when we did the WrestleMania weekend get together and did some podcast, I went up to your house in like April.
Mm-hmm.
And just like we're doing this time to do a podcast, which was supposed to be the first comic club with Shetty Boy, but we all procrastinated in reading the Secret Wars, and we're trying to cram it all in, and with that much dialogue, it was just proving too much of a daunting task. But we did end up talking about the launch of Daredevil season 1 a little bit.
Yeah, I've just been show interrupted, so I lost that last bit. But I do remember we ended up doing the riff tracks for Spidey that weekend. We talked about Daredevil. Do you remember? And what there? I feel like there was something else that happened.
I came up. I believe I got to your house. We went into the middle room between like what's the music room now?
It's the lobby. Yeah,
lobby. So we were in there and we talked about Daredevil because I think I'd seen 3 episodes and you had seen 1 or 2.
One, because I remember you mentioned that there's an awesome fight scene in the second episode.
Yeah, the hallway fight.
And the hallway now, fight is just amazing. So
now, see, that back then, a year ago, that's the weekend that launched, because I think that was on a Saturday and it launched, and I watched a couple episodes on Friday night because I was a night shift person at the time.
Yeah.
And you had only seen the one, so we just briefly talked about it and we finished talking about it at a later date. However, Daredevil Season 2 launched earlier, and I just want to, before we segue completely into this, this is why I cannot watch longer television series. It took me a month to watch this show, Nate.
I know, buddy. I know.
Now, let me say there's a reason. There's like, well, Brando, what, you're on day shift. You have all this time to yourself.
But that's not true.
That's the problem. It's a problem. I have zero time to myself. Okay? I was moving through Arrow just fine until my wife liked it. All right.
And then you guys have to find time to do it together.
Exactly. And you know when that time is? Very small, slim and none. So what happened when Fallout 4 came out?
You just
It stopped.
Yeah.
It stopped. And what hasn't started up again? Arrow or Flash. Even though I just started Flash, and I liked it, and I do. And it's not that I don't want to watch these shows. There's just zero to little time in the day. And at this point in time, there's an unwritten rule, okay? In fact, it probably is written somewhere in the annals of our history of our marriage. If we like something, if you're watching something, you do not continue without the other person. That's a no-no. That's a cardinal sin. You do that. Okay, she has watched movies without me. I'm just trying to think of like examples, like maybe like The Hunger Games is one of them, or this like movie X or something like that. And then she goes, "Oh, well, we'll watch them. I'll rewatch it with you." My desire to watch that movie has now gone to zero.
Yep.
And it might be a great movie. That's awesome. I don't care now, because now we don't get to experience this movie together fresh for the first time. I understand that a lot of people say you're with them when they watch the movie for the first time. And you're almost like enjoying their reaction as much as you are, watching it for a second time. I don't enjoy that, being on that other end of that. And so knowing that, like, especially when they're like, "Oh, this part's awesome." I'm like, "Well, thank you. I might feel the same way if you'd shut up."
Let me experience it for itself.
Not that she does that, but it's just, man, there's been so many things that I haven't watched because she's gone on without me. And I really don't do that with her. I don't go on. In fact, it gets to a point where when we stop watching for so long, it's like, man, I got to almost regroup and watch a catch her up thing on YouTube or something. Like we've done it with Breaking Bad.
Mm-hmm.
I went through two different breaks watching Breaking Bad because we just stopped watching. And then I also did it with House of Cards. And then also, there's another thing, is that I wanted to watch, what's that show called, really, Brando? True Detective.
Oh, True Detective, yeah.
So, and I haven't done that yet either, because, number one, to sit there and find time to watch it by myself. That's how I watched House of Cards, by the way. I turned it on myself, because this is what I want to watch. She goes, "What's this?" "House of Cards." She goes, "Oh, I've seen this. I've seen this around." And next thing I know, she's hooked. So now I can't watch it at my own pace. I have to watch it at our pace.
That's when you got to come to agreements. Like, hey, look, you're going to have to give up a couple of them so I can move forward and watch these. Like, pick the ones you absolutely can't live without watching with me. And the other ones, I'm watching. That's how I'd play that. But I digress. So, Brando, let's talk about it. Daredevil Season 2.
Now that my rant is over, I'm going to go into the other side. And I absolutely loved Season 2, Daredevil.
Yeah, it was great. It was phenomenal storytelling.
I only have a few little nitpicks here and there. Stuff that just didn't really make sense to me.
Okay, go. Let's just slice it to me. Let's talk.
All right, well, my first nitpick is when Elektra decides in one episode, "I'm going to be with Matt."
Spoilers.
If you haven't figured that out by now with Journey into Comics, okay, I'm thinking maybe instead of us having to remember to say spoilers each time we want to talk about something, we should have an introductory note before the intro of the show saying, "Attention, this show is spoilerific."
Yeah, like, "Thank you for tuning into Journey into Comics. The podcast you're about to listen to has tons of fucking spoilers. If you don't know what we're talking about and don't want to be spoiled, don't listen. Have a nice day."
No. Listen. Just
skip that part.
There's a fast forward. We don't want to. You don't want them to not listen to our show. There's other parts that they might actually be caught up on.
That's true.
Okay, so in Daredevil, Elektra gets introduced. Of course, she was alluded to in the first season, just in like passing. But we get to find out that she is a killer at heart. She's killed before many times, and of course, Matt, our good old friend Matt, wants to, you know, bring her back to the light. "You're better than this," kind of thing, you know. She decides that she wants to stay with him and give up this life of killing. Of course, Stick basically calls her a fool, but ultimately leaves her to do that for the time. So they get attacked in Matt's apartment, which at this point, you know, I think he needs to find a new apartment, because there's a lot of people that seem to find out where he lives.
Pretty much everyone.
I know. I think somebody like independent, not like not somebody who's truly evil, but somebody has made a big sign that says Daredevil lives here. And because Matt Murdock is blind, he doesn't know, he knows there's a sign there, but he can't, you know, he can't see the sign that says, you know, don't you want to be a Pepper too? And so he just knows that there's a sign. So for all he knows, that's just like a billboard for like, you know, 2 for $3 Big Macs. But
2 for $3 Big Macs.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so they get attacked, and in the scuffle, Matt gets, does he get poisoned? Like she did with the arrow. Was it a poison arrow? They're putting stuff on the arrow.
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. Well, she just slices his throat. And she's like, I'm sorry, I can change who I am. That was 10 minutes.
Yep.
10 minutes of, I want to be here. I stayed here. Oh, that's cool. Awesome. You're going to be my bitch. No. 10 minutes later, instant, first fight. Couldn't even get through one fight. And also, it's like, wow, this was kind of rushed to end this episode. That bugged me a little bit because I kind of felt like that was some poor writing. Honestly, that is probably one of, and I think there might have been another scene that made me kind of scratch my head about like just kind of the way they did it. But they're literally, this season kicked ass. The action in this damn season was off the hook. And the acting was pretty top notch as well. I do think I like the first season more as a story. But all right, say if these were movies, right? Say you have the first movie, which is the origin story, and it was the origin story for both Daredevil and Fisk.
Okay.
And really, it was a 13-hour movie.
Yep.
Season 2 is exactly what that sequel should be. Introduce new characters, further establish on a villain who's been hinted at in the first one, but really, they don't introduce a new big bad, right? They just further establish a baddie that we're already somewhat familiar with, or at least encountered. I liked that because there was enough new going on throughout the series that they didn't have to shoehorn in, you know, another big Daredevil villain. They could just do it this way. And also they have cameos where they brought Fisk back for a little bit and did some stuff with him and further developed his character for future seasons without having to spend an entire season on that story.
Yeah, this season was very well balanced, I thought.
It was. Unlike the first season, which was kind of like a bit of a slow burn.
I will say this season had a little bit more like intense gore for me. There were some scenes that I like had to turn away. I could not watch. There was a fingernail scene.
Yes, stick.
Yeah, I couldn't. I absolutely, Brando, as soon as I started to see it, I looked down until I just didn't hear the noises that I thought I was hearing, you know.
It's not the hallway fight, not the, because they do another hallway fight. Stairwell fight, not that one, and I'll get back to that in just a second, but the fight in the prison hallway. With the Punisher and all those inmates.
Oh, yeah.
That was fucking awesome.
And super brutal. Very, very Punisher. Like,
on
the nose.
Can we just, diverge for a second? I remember on the 50th episode is when we first all sort of talked about the idea of John Bernthal playing Frank Castle.
Yep.
Right? I mean, I want to say the news had come out maybe just before that. And so now, like, to some people, it was brand new information. To some people, they had heard it. And they'd already kind of made their decision, but there was sort of a mixed reaction between all the people on that podcast, if I remember correctly. It was some people who were like, yeah, they're, you know, that's pretty cool. And other people were like, well, he was a bitch as Shane. And so now I'm not interested.
I mean, not to call out the one singular person that said that, because everybody else, from what I remember, was in agreeance. Every other person in the entirety of the room, every person on Skype, Zeke, Wes, Kevin, Shuddy, the whole nines, everybody were all in agreement that it was great, except for resident smartass Nick Torres, who said, no, John Bernthal looks like a slimy Italian douchebag, was the quote, I do believe.
Well, also, Shuddy sort of said he didn't like him as...
Yeah, well, because Shuddy said he didn't like him as Shane, and that was his big thing that was holding him back from really... accepting his character.
We'll see. I didn't want Nick to be left as the only one who had reservations. I haven't talked to Nick in quite some time now, unfortunately. We're now on opposite shifts.
Oh. You
know, and, you know, unfortunately, that, you know, I mean, he hasn't reached out. I haven't reached out either. And we haven't seen each other in passing too often. So, in all honesty, you know, life does go on. I do look forward to talking to him here soon, if that's all possible. If he's still listening to the show, I miss you, Nick. The heart grows fonder with absence. But from what I understand from his roomie, Blaine, dude, he absolutely loved the Punisher.
And I knew he would. You know, for the most part, when Nick did that on the 50th, I knew he was just kind of, he plays that role, you know, and I like it. I think it's fun. You know, he plays that guy that has to be against everyone else's opinion just to spice things up. And I actually really respect that. So, Nick, if you're listening, we hope you're well. Brandon, is there anything really else about Daredevil Season 2 you want to mention? I will say that, to me, the finale was very flat and very predictable, but that didn't take away from my overall experience of this season.
Okay, I will say that the finale is what it was. I didn't take that as a negative.
Exactly.
It was very predictable, and that's okay. Sometimes things are okay to be predictable. That's fine. But the one thing that I understand why they did it. Of course, they kind of wrapped up Frank's story in the episode before that.
Yep.
So, like, you only saw a few clips of Frank in the last episode, and one of it was him showing up to help Daredevil at the end. Which, have you heard Kevin Smith's impersonation of John Bernthal?
No.
All right.
I guess I'm gonna have to do that.
Well, it's okay because Blaine asked me to do it on air.
Oh yes.
Because I made some people laugh, and I'm gonna try and get my microphone back so I don't like blow you out. I do apologize if there's any thudding with my mic because I'm holding it. But all right, so Kevin Smith on Batman, Fatman on Batman. They were talking Daredevil. They're talking about John Bernthal and Daredevil. They're talking about, which I haven't gone through and listened to the whole review part of that because I'm just, as soon as they started talking about, like, oh, what he does in episode, I'm like, oh, done.
Yep.
Episode done. I'll come back later. But they were talking about his role as Shane in The Walking Dead, right? And like, there's actually, like, a few similarities between Shane and Frank. Not much. But there's one instance, one kind of thing where Shane is like, you can't protect him, Rick. And then, of course, in Daredevil's like, you can't protect him, Matt.
That's pretty good, dude.
I did that at work one day, and Blaine lost it.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I don't think I've seen his face that red ever.
Oh, damn.
And then on the last episode of Batman or Fatman on Batman, I keep saying Batman on Batman. it's Michael Keaton hosting a podcast about Batman. But when they talked about Daredevil again, he didn't say Matt. He said Red, right? Like, and Frank Castle calls Daredevil Red. Mm-hmm. Can't protect him, Red. I absolutely loved. Love the Punisher in this, though. I feel like it's the closest to the Punisher that we've gotten in a visual medium.
Okay, so I have a question. I want to bring this up as this kind of like a closing tangent to this thing. But I know I want it, but do we get the Daredevil Netflix series?
Absolutely. Come on, vote in. I have my vote casted.
I mean, yeah, absolutely, without question, we have to have it. What kind of stories can they tell? They can't just be gory nonstop. They've got to kind of really get into the psychotic side of this character, I feel.
Well, they already started to do that a little bit with Frank in Daredevil, where he kind of got close with Karen.
Yeah, that's true.
And there's a scene in the diner where they're talking, and they go into the fact, and they acknowledge the fact that Frank can just dissect someone's psyche and character and understand everything about them and just see right through the bullshit.
Yep.
I want to say was the guy that played his CEO. He mentioned to Karen that he could do impressions like anything else. It'd be flawless. because he would just understand the little nuances in their speech patterns and their tics, and he would get it in just by observing them.
Yeah.
And I want to see more of that. I want to see more. I mean, of course, he's got to be the Punisher. You can't have the Punisher without some drag out, knockout violence. That's fine. Fill that thing up with some violence. But I definitely want some episodes where we find out more about what makes him tick. It's not just the fact that, you know, his family was murdered on that day. It's not just the fact that he relives it every time he closes his eyes. There's more a human side to him, and I want to see that exposed in the next episode.
I mean,
in the next series.
In the next series, yeah. If they did it, I think it'd be smart for Marvel. Honestly, if you're Marvel, you go, okay, Punisher, he's got all these different awesome things, but how do you really draw people? Because they're going to be worried, well, we got to get the right kind of numbers. Punisher's, while he's a very popular character, he's not the most popular character Marvel has ever had. And they've been taking chances. They've been gambling with characters. But this would be an interesting opportunity to introduce other TV-type cameos into the Netflix series. You could introduce Spider-Man, Tom Holland, Spider-Man. I know John Bernthal has said he wants to work with him on screen officially since they did screen tests together to actually be cast both as Spider-Man and the Punisher. You could get Charlie Cox back as Matt Murdock to appear in an episode or two.
Oh, yeah.
The chick that plays Karen Page could come in. You could literally spread it out to where it feels just like a nice, beautiful extension of Daredevil.
We'll see, and that's... I mean, they're doing a Luke Cage show.
Yeah,
they can do a Punisher show.
Totally.
So, I mean, come on. I mean, if you ask me, do I want a Punisher show or a Luke Cage show, and pick one, you can only get one, I'm going to go with Punisher. That's just me. Nothing against Luke Cage. I'm more, you know, fond of the Punisher character. I want to see that, yeah. And see, and that's the thing about these characters and the city of New York getting bigger and bigger with these new characters. You can do crossovers. You can do, you know, different little things like that.
All right, Brandon, I got to ask you this question.
Ask away.
It's Thursday, May the 6th. It's 7 p.m. You are in the movie theater. You sit down, and there's a section that's bright as the fucking sky because kids are texting. What did you think before we actually get into the nitty-gritty details? What did you think when the initial news broke that AMC was considering allowing texting during movies now?
By the time I read it and saw it, they'd already, like, recanted it. So, because I clicked on it and went, what? And it said, and they were like, never mind, bro. I went, oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
My initial reaction was like, well, I'm not going to AMC theaters.
Which is difficult. They control so much. I couldn't tell you where there's an AMC theater near, or a theater that is not AMC related near me.
Around me, I have Goodrich, so.
Oh, yeah, that's cool. That's true.
That's fine.
But, yeah, I saw this. I just wanted to throw this little blurb up. Come on, use your brains. We don't need, the experience is movies, is to be experiencing the movie and to be completely enveloped in that room and to feel the tension and the fear and the joy and all the different feelings with the crowd. There's something extraordinarily satisfying to be in a room with a bunch of people you don't know and to feel the same feelings without even having to relay any kind of communication to each other, you know.
Comedies are more enjoyable in a theater setting.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. How many people, and how fucking cool is it, Brandon? I know it happened for you. Go see Star Wars Episode 7 and the fucking theater breaks out and clapping.
Mm-hmm.
That's an amazing moment to just feel like, man, everyone felt the same. That's awesome. You know, that's the purpose of movies, and I don't know, texting has no place.
I actually just watched The Force Awakens for the first time since the theater, and I still like the movie, but I do kind of feel like it was better in the theater.
Yeah, I've watched it several times. I think I mentioned that on the last podcast that I've seen it like probably like 10 or 12 times. It's getting ridiculous. I watch it a lot. But,
I personally think that there are definitely scenes in that movie that were designed to get a pop.
Exactly.
That really, when you watch it at home, you're like, I see what they did there. Like, I see why they did it.
There's a very specific line that I'm going to guess you're probably also thinking of. The who goes first? You go first, I go first. With Poe and Kylo Ren when they first meet there at the beginning. Like, who go first or is it me? You know? Like,
yeah, that scene felt really weird to me sitting at home watching that.
And I'm just like, well, yeah, of course you're going to say that, Poe, because you're kind of a smartass. I know about your character now. You know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he is a smartass, but there's a couple more. I know. And obviously, you know, the movie, not to tangent here at all, really, but the movie was done by fans for fans and to reinvigorate the Star Wars franchise in a way that gives you something that you knew from the original trilogy, and there's a lot of that sprinkled out throughout the movie. So there's definitely a lot of the movie was designed to get your emotional reaction that way, and also to be a popcorn flick as well. And I mean, it definitely succeeded because I thought the movie was amazing in the theaters, and then I thought maybe it was like maybe a notch down at home, but that was just I haven't had a chance to watch it sans baby yet. You know, just
with surround sound or what have you, and really immerse yourself into that.
Well, I watched it last weekend, and the women's had girls' night, and the guys had guys' night, but I had the baby, so I was wrangling the baby
during the movie film.
Trying to just keep him entertained, and not that made the movie bad, but I didn't get to sit there twiddling my thumbs watching the movie, reliving the movie because that's the second time I've seen it. I only didn't see it again in theater, even though I wanted to.
Yeah,
but. Enjoyable, definitely.
Awesome. All right, Brandon, next question.
Next answer.
Our childhood is making a resurgence these next couple years. This year we've got the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. They're trying to introduce Krang and Bebop Rocksteady, another Shredder, you know, Baxter Stockman, you know, Casey Jones, the Turtles, the whole nines. That doesn't matter. What matters is Saban's Power Rangers is next year, I think. It's right around the corner, early next year.
I don't know the exact date. I don't know.
I know it's not this year. There's too much shit coming on this year. Too much. But Elizabeth Banks, first picture of her as the new Rita. What do you think?
Different. I mean, it's fine.
It's cool.
I personally am not. I mean, as much as I'm like attached to the Power Rangers as a kid growing up watching it, I'm more than okay with some different takes on the Mighty Morphin series. I mean. I didn't expect them to make Rita look like Rita from, you know, the 1990s series, especially when that version of that look of the character, I don't know when that aired in Japan, but probably the 80s.
Yeah, it was late 80s, like 87, 88.
And then they, in the early 90s, they, you know, reused all those Japanese scenes and overdubbed them for America, for Power Rangers. The look of the character, it needed a new, fresh look and look nothing like the original. In fact, you know what? When I first saw the picture, I thought it was Scorpina at first.
And that was the rumor that she was going to be the main baddie for this movie.
Scorpina?
Yeah, that was the original rumor way back, was that she was the main villain and the main focal point. And obviously, that rumor had been put to rest when Elizabeth Banks was cast and announced as Rita. Maybe Scorpina will have a minor role in the movie, but she's not the major player that people had kind of hyped her up to be. I think Rita looks awesome. I think she's really green, which makes me wonder if they're going to try to, like, start a trilogy of telling the Green Ranger story, like, in movie form.
Well, what I would do is I wouldn't enter in the first movie. I would save it for the sequel.
Yeah.
That's what I would do. I would put Green Ranger in the sequel, make him be the main villain of the sequel.
Do you think Rita maybe has control of whatever form of the Dragon Zord exists in the first movie then? As a way to fight the Rangers?
You know, I don't know, because the Dragon Zord was introduced with the Green Ranger.
That is true. That is true.
I don't really know.
I don't know, man. I'm excited. Power Rangers is my bread and butter.
Dude, the original Mighty Morphin series, the original movie.
Oh, God. Ivan Ooze.
I have a news, even though that movie is so bad, it's good.
It's great, though. The costumes are phenomenal.
Yeah, they do look pretty good. They did a good job of translating that into a Western movie, you know, because it was the original Japanese series, and then it was made into a Western series with Japanese footage. And then they started doing different stuff in the second season when they start having to film more footage over here. But to translate that Japanese idea into a movie, they actually did a much better job than what Dragon Ball Evolution did with Dragon Ball.
That is true. I never saw Dragon Ball Evolution, by the way.
Oh, dude, we're doing a Rift Tracks on it. Cool. I know Team Four Star has already done it. I know they've already done it. I don't care. One of these days, dude, add that to the list. Dragon Ball Evolution is at times mind-numbingly dumb.
Oh, wow.
There's, you know, I will defend a few things. There's a few cool things about it, and that's about it. The rest of it, dude, the rest of it, you're sitting there and you're just laying there going, why? Why are they doing this?
Okay, so we're going to do a Rift Tracks on that. There's obviously plans for several other Rift Tracks. Hopefully we can accomplish some of those in the near future. So, Brandon, you just told me this, and I'm shocked. You didn't even know this came out. Doctor Strange trailer. What are your thoughts, man?
I like it. I like it a lot. It's very visually appealing.
Yeah, they said this movie is going to be mind-bending and mind-breaking in theaters in 3D.
There's a spot where it showed the city like upside down on like above the city. It reminded me of something from like Inception that way.
See, and I thought that too. This is shaping up to be the Marvel Cinematic Universe's Inception style movie.
Well, especially the way it's shot. I mean, I don't know if the story will be on that level, but I mean, I'm not knocking it by any means, but Inception's a hell of a movie to try and aspire to be. I didn't even know that this trailer came out. I don't know where I was. Was I under a rock sleeping?
I don't know. It was last week during Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Kimmel had a bunch of the Marvel stars on, and it was like Team Cap was on, Team Iron Man was on. Benedict Cumberbatch did a little like video in to debut this trailer. I'm pretty sure it was last Tuesday, the 12th, when this trailer dropped. And I had obviously been interviewed. I had interviewed the guys from the Black Suit of Death the day before. So we weren't really planning on doing a show. So if it wasn't something that you actively knew was going to come out even, which you probably wouldn't have. You don't watch Jimmy Kimmel, I don't think.
No.
You wouldn't have known it came out. And I wouldn't have even thought to tell you because we weren't planning on talking about it. That's why I put it on there today, because I thought, well, now will be our chance to talk about it. And now you're finding out about it.
Hey, man, it's cool. I think I told you off air. The last thing I knew was like the poster. I'm like, hey, the poster looks cool.
Yeah, and that was released like 12 hours before the trailer.
Okay, and you know, I didn't even know. And you said trailer reaction. I'm like, oh, cool, there's a teaser. And then I click on it, and I'm like, oh, crap, that's a 2-minute trailer. Where the hell, like, you know, the 12th, you know, sitting here going, where the hell was I? I had no idea. It looks pretty neat. I like it. It looks like it's going to be a really cool, origin story for this character who really is really kind of like an unsung hero for the Marvel Universe. He's a character that doesn't get a lot of love
mainstream.
From the mainstream fans.
I think Dr. Stephen Strange is going to kind of... This is... To me, I feel like he's going to be a different... kind of like how Guardians was, you know?
Yeah.
People are going to start to look at this character like, whoa, I never even knew I would like this guy, but now I know, you know?
Well, exactly. And I think... I even think that Strange has gotten a little bit more press than Guardians has, so there's a chance that it can even reach a more broader audience from the get-go without having, you know, having rely on sheer curiosity. I was a bit thrown off, to be honest with you, hearing him without his, you know, accent.
Yeah.
But that's fine. I mean, that's, come on now. He's an actor. He can act. But I really dig it. It's got this weird Inception meets The Matrix martial arts era, like, you know, kind of vibe to it. You know, I was waiting for him to, like, you know, like, there's a scene where, like, his essence, his spirit, his chakra got knocked out of his body, whatever. And he's, like, sort of, like, freaking out about it. And I was, like, expecting him to go, whoa.
Whoa, that was overwhelming. Yeah, man, I'm looking forward to this. I think it's a great move by Marvel to get this trailer out when they did. Because now it has some time to cook before Civil War comes out. Then when Civil War comes out, you can attach that trailer to Civil War. You can do a post-credit scene with Stephen Strange.
Yeah.
You can do any kind of thing like that, and I think that's really smart marketing. Then you can also, there's another Marvel movie that comes out this year, beside Doctor Strange and Civil War, because actually there's another Fox movie coming out this year that's not Deadpool. We get X-Men Age of Apocalypse this year. I'm jazzed to see that, man. I'm very excited to see that movie.
Me too. I really enjoy this second attempt at an X-Men trilogy from Fox, especially since from the get-go, Bryan Singer's been back involved. In my opinion, Singer gets the X-Men universe. He gets what can be translated into film. You know, like you know what I mean? It's not 100%, dedicated in look to the comic. They definitely have their own look, but he understands how to use like a lot of these different characters and to establish. And the movies that he's directed, they stand, they definitely stand up because we've all seen what X-Men movies can be without him.
Yeah.
Involved. And what we got was X-Men 3 United. Wait, no, that was X2 was United, wasn't it?
Yeah, X2 is X-Men United. X3 was Last Stand.
Last Stand. That's what it was. Well, they were all united somehow at the end of 3, but
I guess
that never happened now thanks to Days of Future Past. Anyway,
super smart.
I'm really excited. I'm really excited to see what Oscar Isaacs brings to Apocalypse, especially after we just mentioned how much of a entertaining smartass he was in Star Wars, and to see him in a different light so soon is really going to help paint him as a really multifaceted actor. Anything else that I have to add about this so far coming up other than when we were sort of talking about what we were going to talk about the movie after this one, you said you wanted to talk about, they could be doing a Dark Phoenix.
Yeah. That is what, Fox has early rumblings. We always talk about stuff that's, not even officially been announced yet. And it seems like a lot of times it gets announced, but it seems Fox is really keen on the idea of trying this Dark Phoenix saga again, maybe get it right this time, unlike X3, maybe do it in, you got to think, these guys, First Class was a chance to go, okay, we can write really, really good movies and create a new kind of universe for these people to be in. Days of Future Past mended the wound between the two. Now moving forward, they're like, well, what else can we do that people would love to see? Well, people love Apocalypse. Let's do Age of Apocalypse. People love the Jean Grey character in Phoenix. Let's do the Dark Phoenix saga. I think that's just so smart of them to think that way,
Yeah. And one thing that I mentioned that you didn't know, and this was,
yeah, I forgot about this.
Back on March 31st. This was revealed, or this was broken as a news story. I would say it's revealed because it's not 100% confirmed yet. But we were the new movie after this one. Apparently, now this could be, this could be changed by that time, or it's going to be called New Mutants, and it's going to continue the story after Apocalypse. And it seems that Storm, played by Alexander Shipp, and McAvoy's Professor X is going to be in this. As well as probably some of the younger cast members that are debuting in Apocalypse to play like Jean Grey, Cyclops, these kind of characters.
I think Jubilee is maybe in Apocalypse.
Might be.
Psylocke is in Apocalypse.
Psylocke is, yeah. Nightcrawler? Was he there?
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, so Maisie Williams might be in talks to... or is potentially coming. Anyway, she might be playing Wolfsbane.
Oh, interesting.
And then also Anya Taylor-Joy is another actress. She is from The Witch, whatever that is. I don't know. I guess I am just completely uneducated on whatever that is. But we'll be playing Magic. And it says, yet to be cast actors to play Cannonball, Sunspot, and Mirage.
Ooh.
Which means that Boone, best known for doing The Fault in Our Stars, which I take it I did not see Boone. Oh, directed by Josh Boone. I totally skipped right over that line. So, unfortunately, Bryan Singer's not coming back, but I can understand doing and directing 4 X-Men movies. He's done his he's done his duty. He's done us well.
Yeah.
But he'll be going the traditional team up for the for the film. He has been attached to New Mutants for a while, but if he's now casting, it means they could be coming sooner rather than later. Basically, and the course of the Gambit movie got pushed back, and then they also announced also with the X-Verse, because that's really what Fox seems to be pushing for now. Daredevil sequel is going to have its director, the original, back.
Yep.
Which is good news all around, because he can help keep that film feeling the same, same but more,
Absolutely. So let's. I think, man, overall, X-Men is I feel like the X-Men are going to forever be in their own universe. We'll never see them cross over with Marvel. But I feel like some moves have been made and Fantastic Four is getting ready to be announced as a part of the Marvel family again. I've got a kind of a gut feeling on that although they haven't said it, the cancellation of Fantastic Four number 2, the fact that they, don't want to do another sequel. They don't want to try again. The numbers were so bad. They got such terrible press. I think Marvel said the same thing as they did to Sony, and Sony technically had a success with the Amazing Spider-Man series, and Fox failed with the Fantastic Four series. Is, hey, look, we can help you. You guys publish it. We'll do all the work. We'll make sure the continuity matters. We'll make sure it intertwines with the bigger universe. And that'll be awesome, and I'm hoping that's the case. But outside of all of that talk, Brando, Rosario Dawson, Night Nurse, it's Claire, right, in the show?
Yeah.
She's a very, very, very political willed person. She's a supporter of Bernie Sanders. She's also been doing this thing called Democracy Spring. There's a big, protest on the lawn of the White House, essentially, and, its Senate and whatnot, trying to get reform and a bunch of different things happening. And Rosario Dawson actually got arrested and fined a whopping $50 for public protest, as did the creators of Ben and Jerry Ice Cream.
Also the host of The Young Turks.
Yes, I saw that as well.
He was also there, man. See, man, $50. Man, she had to dig deep into that Daredevil money.
Oh yeah, think about it. She has, Men in Black 2 money and Sin City money, and Clerks 2 money. Rosario Dawson's been in a lot of awesome stuff.
Yeah, she has, and you know what? She doesn't get enough credit either.
I agree. I totally agree. You know who else doesn't get enough credit, Brando?
Who is that?
Journey into Wrestling.
Oh, yeah, that new podcast we do.
That is a new podcast that we do, folks. You can check that out on YouTube, by the way. Our first episode is up on the YouTube. Go there to Journey into Comics. Search us on the YouTube.
Yeah, you know what? Journey into Wrestling 1 sort of was like a kind of a clusterfuck of an episode. Not to say that it's bad. I'm just saying that it was kind of poorly booked.
It had a lot going on.
It was almost kind of like the Man of Steel of the first episodes, where it's like our origin episode where we talk about how we got into wrestling, as well as reviewing WrestleMania as it's happening for the pre-show stuff. And then we were able to kind of cut it off pretty quick and go home early and then watch WrestleMania and then talk about it. This is also I don't think he said anything. I don't think he did anything, but it might be the podcast premiere of my son.
Yeah. For sure, he was on. He was there.
Yeah, it was.
I was there. He was there.
Yeah, we'll see. Okay, the thing is that we don't really edit too much of our podcast. We really don't. The only time that we do any edits is when we have like a massive connection failure and stuff needs to be pieced together to make, a cohesive show. So we just didn't edit it out. Rob's wife, Gretchen, kind of came in the room. Had no idea we were recording. I don't have a little red light on the outside of my room like they do in Full House. to note that we were recording. So she just came in and we were sitting there talking about wrestling and we just stopped and we went, hey, how's it going? But Journey into Wrestling on YouTube. On our YouTube, we're launching some other podcasts. We mentioned it here on the show before. And this is basically a plug, and we're going to talk about a couple of wrestling stuff here. Stuff that you might actually hear on that podcast, which, I mean, come on, we've talked about wrestling here before as well. And we're not going to stop talking about whatever the hell we want to talk about here. But when we do, we might just sort of like nudge, nudge, hint, hint. We have a full podcast for this stuff if this kind of stuff interests you.
If that's what you prefer, if you just want to hear us speak about wrestling, this would be where you go check that out. Yeah. So let's talk about it, Brando. Conor McGregor, UFC fighter, really weird cryptically tweets that he's retiring. He made enough cheese or some shit like that and peace out. He is immediately pulled from the UFC 200 card. Nate Diaz, probably poking fun at Conor McGregor, says that he is also retiring. But then some interesting stuff happened. Conor McGregor, out of nowhere, followed three people on Twitter right after he announced his retirement. These three people were Triple H, Stephanie McMahon, and Shane McMahon. Oh, and there was a fourth. He also followed Becky Lynch, who had tweeted to him like, come with me, my friend or my brother or something like that, because she's also Irish, saying this is a place to be. So it seems there's a rumbling and a rumor, and it makes sense, and I'll kind of cover this little quickly. But Conor McGregor suffered really a crazy circumstance a couple weeks ago. He was cornering his friend and the guy that corners him in his fights. At a fight that was going on in Ireland, I want to say, and the opponent that his friend was fighting died in the ring. And seeing a person die in real life in a fight scenario obviously would change you. And I think he started thinking about his life and said, I don't want that to be me. I don't want to die in a ring. That was horrific. So how do you get longevity? He's a shit talker as it is. The WWE is a perfect place for someone like Conor McGregor, who is naturally charismatic and who, you know, CM Punk can transcend and leave the WWE to go fight, and Brock Lesnar did it and came back. What's to say Conor McGregor can't do it the opposite direction first, kind of like Ken Shamrock did back in the day?
And Dan Severn.
Oh, and Dan Severn. Don't forget
Sam. In fact, Dan Severn was the UFC, he was a UFC champion. Because back then they did the tournaments for each event. He was a UFC champion and the NWA World Heavyweight Champion at the same time.
Only person in the world.
He was pro wrestling and MMA at the same time. Now, for me, okay, yeah, this kind of threw me back a little bit, because at first I thought maybe it was just a Twitter joke. And then the more I started hearing about it, and the more it's like, no, this is absolutely, absolutely legit. He just sort of just spoke about it frankly. There was no big hurrah, no big, you know, parade about him retiring. He goes, yep, I'm done. Bye.
Yep.
And then, okay, so there's a coworker. I know him. I'm not real close with him. My friend Joe Grimes, that I work with, he hollered over. He goes, what do you think about McGregor? And then the only thing this guy said, he's a pussy. this other coworker, he's a big MMA fan.
Ah.
I've heard this guy talk shit. Unfortunately, in the last fight he had, he got roughed up pretty bad. Of course, it was a, unfortunate circumstance of like fighting somebody who's above your weight class, and he had to try and meet that, right? Is that what that was?
I mean, he chose to say he would fight two weight classes above what he is. Yeah, he was two weight classes above. He's a bantamweight, I think, at 135, and he fought at 170.
Okay,
so if that's correct,
I'm just gonna say that. You said he's 135.
He was the champion at 135. Of course, now with him announcing his retirement, he's probably nothing. But he wrestled, or he fights at 135, and then he went up to 170, which is two weight classes. Lightweight is 155, and then 170 is your welterweight. 185 is middleweight, and then 205 is light heavyweight, and then anything over 225 is your heavyweights.
If he wants to go to WWE, he might want to put on some pounds. And I don't mean that to be negative Nancy here. I'm just going to say that he is going to look really small in comparison.
Oh, yeah, totally. He'll be tiny.
I mean, everyone knows who he is. He's a, you know, he's a UFC star. He's on the cover of the of UFC 2, or at least he what is that game come out?
It's already out.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, he was on the cover of that along with Ronda. He's a UFC megastar, essentially, or was, until he announced his early retirement. I mean, so people know who this guy is. WWE has got to be interested in getting this guy and, you know, getting him trained and getting him brought in. I would jump on that in a heartbeat because they're struggling for new megastar talent. The problem is that is he going to be used right? He's got to put on some weight to look right. And I'm not saying that smaller guys can't do good. I'm just saying that, man, it's going to be hard to get fans into you when you're standing next to a guy like Roman Reigns, or like even a guy like Dean Ambrose, and you look like you're like Spider-Man, you know?
Absolutely. That's a who was I thinking of? I mean, not to be rude as shit, and obviously Conor McGregor's built much better, but like Gilbert. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the same kind of thing. Gilbert was a tiny little dude.
He was. No, I really hope that, you know, if it's all true and it's all done, that, yeah, that McGregor's done, and if he's interested in going, go. Totally. You know, it'd be really cool to see it happen.
Totally. You mentioned Roman Reigns. He's champ right now. What do you think about his number one contender? I personally love, and I want to definitely dive into this when we get into the next podcast that we do that's Journey into Wrestling that you can check out on YouTube. But I definitely want to discuss this in like really, really, really deep detail is how they've been making Raw awesome again. What do you think about AJ Styles, number one contender for the title?
Well, I mean, very interesting way to go, especially when you're trying to get Roman cheered. To take a guy who is, you know, loved by the diehards and the casual fans are starting to get into him, to put this is basically like a babyface match, right? And then you've been having Roman sort of like they're sort of making him in a way to where he's like they know they're not going to really cheer him right now, even though like that's what they want. So they're not going to try and put him into a position where he's going to get overly cheered.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Now, okay. Before we move any further into this, okay, as I have to bring out Angry Brando here.
Ooh, we've
there's not.
Do we have anybody got that on record? Have we ever had Angry Brando on this show?
Maybe, I don't know. There's very few things that I really get worked up about, and pro wrestling is one of them. Even though it is what it is. Anyway, I took my glasses off to rub my eyes. That's how legitimately frustrated I am with the segment that I'm about to discuss. Did you watch the Raw after WrestleMania?
Yep.
Did you hear what JBL said?
Nope.
All right, I did. It's the top of the show. They're talking about the crowd after Mania, which the last 4 years have been, it's the WrestleMania diehard crowd.
Oh, yeah, I remember what he said. Yeah. Go ahead, though.
There's a bunch of people happy to be here. They're crazy. Sometimes they cheer who they should be booing and boo who they should be cheering. They're crazy. They're just so happy to be here. That statement is the lotus biggest fucking crock of shit I've ever fucking heard. Are you telling me? All right. So you're telling me that as a casual fan tuning in for the first time in like 7 years, I should disregard the reactions from this show?
Yeah, that's what they told you.
Pretty much, just so they know Roman's going to get booed here, okay? Because they're shoving them down, they're shoving Roman down our throats, literally, okay? I do not dislike Roman Reigns. I dislike the way they use Roman Reigns. Big difference, okay? These fans booed him at Mania. They've booed him on Raw, all right? And I'm supposed to take away that I'm not supposed to not like this guy because this crowd's weird. They've been doing this so much. They do it when they go to London because who goes to the fucking London Raw when they go overseas? It's the fucking diehards. You know, Vince fucking Russo had the fucking balls to say on Steve Austin's podcast that the big mistake that WWE is making is booking to their hardcore fans. They need to book to the casuals. What the fuck is this then, Vince? What the fuck is it? They're the hardcore fans who liked Roman when he was with the Shield, who cheered him when they thought he was going to, when they wanted him to win the Rumble besides Batista. All of a sudden, WWE misuses this guy. He doesn't know how to talk. They put a mic in his hand. They make him talk. They make him, they bumble the ball with this guy. CM Punk throws him underneath the bus and says they want him to look good. Now they know he's the fucking chosen guy. What do? Do they change their game plan? No, because Vince says, well, he's the guy, and I'm going to make him the guy, and I know what they want more than they do. You know what they fucking want? They want to boo his ass. So get him in a program and make him booed. You know what they did with The Rock when they fucking turned him heel, and then they started cheering him. Then what did he do? No, fuck you guys. You guys booed me. Now you want to cheer me? Fuck you. I'm not going to stand with you, and I'm never going to stand with you. And what did he become? One of the biggest megastars the business has ever seen. I don't think Roman has that in him, but I'm not going to discredit him or discount him from doing that same. The fact that pisses me off is that they have their diehard base. Who goes to Mania? Who fills up that 100,000-seater? Are there casual fans there? I'm not going to say there aren't. But then who goes to Raw? The 30,000 diehard fans that go there to show their passion for this, because it's no longer a giant stigma to be labeled as a wrestling fan.
Correct.
And they cheer and they let their voices heard. There's a sign out in the crowd that says, do not silence our voices. For them to say that, that irked me so bad. And as you said, Raw as a show has been pretty decent lately. But nothing's changed.
No. And nothing has changed. It won't until Vince McMahon is buried in the ground. I hate to say that, but that's just the fact.
You know, and even then, I dare say, I mean, it's not just Vince. You know, it's another guy that is really high up in that company.
Yeah.
And whose opinion is worth more than other people's opinion should be in that company, and whose payroll is bigger than what it should be, and that's Kevin Dunn.
Yep.
That motherfucker, oh God, he has way too much influence, and he shouldn't. He's a TV guy. Let him do TV. He should not have any fucking say in creative. With that being said, I've diverged for too long here. The AJ versus Reigns thing, I know what they're going to do. Okay, they're going to put Reigns over. Then again, they might throw me a fucking bone here, and then they might do the opposite. I highly doubt that. I have a question for you right now, though.
Shoot.
Who's the biggest heel right now?
Who's the biggest heel in WWE?
Yeah.
That's hard, man.
Who is?
Top, well.
Who is right now?
Jericho Owens.
Right. Okay, yeah, but what are they doing? But they're busy.
But they're oh, you're saying that Jericho and Owens are busy, okay. Another heel that's in the business that's top dog?
Yeah, yeah, nobody.
Nobody.
I don't know anybody. They just turned Bray Wyatt face, didn't they?
And then he got hurt.
Yeah, he got hurt again. But, I mean, regardless, I mean, he's been kind of a tweener for the last few months anyway. So, you know, Lesnar's not coming back anytime soon. You know, that is what it is. That's something that we as fans have to accept. The next big heel maybe won't come out until Payback. Now, with that being said, there is a heel, he was a heel, set to return any time now.
Randy Orton?
No. He's a few months out.
Seth Rollins.
Does that mean he's a heel when he comes back? I don't know. Because I think the crowd's going to go nuts when he comes out.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Especially if he's against Roman.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because in my opinion, the crowd has turned on Roman. So, on Raw this past week, Anderson and Gallows, AJ Styles, you know, buddies from the Bullet Club, they debuted 2 weeks ago, and they came out, and they beat up Roman. And they basically said, AJ, we got your back at Payback. And AJ's like, I had nothing to do with that. That's not me. What do you do in this situation? Here's what I would do, okay? And there's actually two different ways that you can do this, but I'm going to pick one. Because it's going to be interesting, because it's going to be something that I would want to see.
Okay, go for it.
And it's something that could potentially repair the situation that they've done with Roman without having to turn him heel. They turn AJ heel.
Ooh.
They turn AJ heel, have Gallows and Anderson be with him. Bullet Club is formed to WWE or whatever they call it. And the Authority comes back. And Triple H is like, there's always a plan B. Meet the future of the WWE, and it's AJ Styles.
Oh, what? That would be crazy.
You didn't even know. Signed him back in January. He debuted. None of you even put it together. You know, that night when he walked out at the Rumble number 3, you know, that moment foretold everything. Everybody was fooled. You know, and then he can say, I didn't know that he was the next big guy for this company until I saw him, saw what he did in Japan. You know, meet the future of the WWE. Who does that bring out?
Seth Rollins.
Who was the future.
Mm-hmm.
So then you set up a title match, Seth Rollins versus AJ Styles. Shenanigans happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Roman runs out. Shenanigans happen. It ends up in the ring. The Bullet Club is retreating with the authority. The three guys in the ring are Ambrose, Rollins, Reigns. They all look at each other, and they all put their fists together. You have the Bullet Club versus the Shield.
Oh, that would be an awesome thing, Brando.
Yep. And I actually booked this all the way out to next year's WrestleMania.
Damn.
No, they'll never do this, okay? This is just me fantasy booking. So you take it to SummerSlam, right? And you can have Reigns get his rematch, okay? And then he ultimately fails when they bring up the next member of the Bullet Club.
Finn Balor.
And then midway through there, you have a surprise win, right? Somebody beats AJ for the WWE title, and it's Dean Ambrose.
Ooh.
Okay, but it's not a lengthy reign. It's a very short reign. It's just something. It's something done to spark some heat in between there, right? And then, now every member of the Shield has been WWE champion.
Ooh.
That leads us to the Rumble. AJ faces somebody else at the Rumble. The Shield has to earn their way. All three of them are in there, and it ends with all three of them, final three competitors. They look at each other. They look at the WrestleMania sign. They nod, and they all eliminate themselves at exactly the same time, leaving the crowd going, what the hell just happened?
Ooh, or alternately, you could have them all roll under the ring and walk out.
We'll see what... What ends up being is that the Shield is eventually declared the winner of the Rumble. All three. And they all go to Mania for a fatal four-way elimination match where AJ has to defend the belt against all three of them. And he's finally put into a corner. And then you put over one of the three guys. And see, doing this, okay, you put Roman back into an environment where he's going to get cheered.
Yep.
You make Rollins and Ambrose equals to him. And granted, Ambrose is a bit behind because he doesn't have a lengthy reign behind him, but him getting that quick win is going to be akin to like Lex Luger beating Hollywood Hogan back in 97, where he just kind of won one night. And you're like, holy crap, dude. It on Raw, you know, or on Nitro, Luger won the belt. And then he lost it like that following pay-per-view, like that, yep, that Saturday. Hog Wild, Road Wild, whatever it was.
Road Wild, yeah.
But it was something that in the midst of the ratings war was like, dude, you should have watched Nitro, dude. Beat Hogan. Someone finally beat Hogan. In the midst of the storyline, that would be that moment. On Raw. Do it on Raw, where Ambrose gets the win and it's the big party. And then of course the heels kind of come back and get the belt back on AJ. But that's what I would do. That's not what they're going to do. They're going to push Roman. Roman's going to go over. It's going to be interesting how they get out of this conundrum without making AJ and Gallows and Anderson look bad.
Yeah.
Because personally, I think even though the Bullet Club would be heels, there would be cheered heels, and then you put the Shield back together and they would be cheered faces, even with how they've been booing Roman. I think the crowd wants to like Roman. I just don't think they like where he's positioned and how he's portrayed.
I agree with you. I think they want him to, like, I think right now they want to hate him. And if you let them hate him and just embrace it, it'll be better for him in the long run when you can turn him face again.
Well, see, with what I did, you didn't even, you know, turn him. But another route you could do is have Gallows and Anderson turn on AJ and have Reigns turn and go, who's bulletproof now.
Ooh, that's brilliant. Yeah.
Then, because they've already trademarked the name Bulletproof. And then you can actually have Rollins come back as the babyface and the Authority come back as babyfaces to stop Roman. It'd be weird. It would flip it.
Brandon,
you know?
You need to get out of the line of work you're in and try to find your way to that, because I would watch the shit out of that.
They'll never hire me because I have no history in writing soap operas.
Well, damn it. Anyways, let's talk about another podcast you do.
Oh, what do you know?
You do this podcast called Game Addicts. You and Mike Norris do it. It's also on the Journey into Comics YouTube.
We're plugging.
We'll plug it, but so real quick, and we're going to kind of fly through these last couple things as the time winds down. I sent you a video earlier today, Paranormal Activity Virtual Reality.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think? I laughed so hard.
Well, I do wonder about people's being, you know, how like when you're in the Matrix, it's real.
Yeah.
You know, how these people's are going to react to stuff like this when it gets to retail. I mean, was that game out already? Is it out or is it
no,
demo?
No. That's just like an early demo of it.
Okay, because, yeah. I mean, here's the thing with that is VR, man. VR sounds cool, but it also kind of scares me because I like immersion in a game, but you take immersion to a point where you end up pissing your own pants or you make yourself motion sickness, you know, have motion sickness or anything like that. That's almost the point of I want to try it, but I don't know if I want to have that be my absolute gaming experience all the time.
Yeah, I don't think I'd like to have that as my gaming experience all the time. Plus, it seems like you need a pretty big room to fully enjoy it. Like, if I was in a tiny space in this tiny house, I don't think I could. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can't walk very far. I'm not going to move my couches out of the room so I can play my, you know, my Oculus Rift or whatever. It was funny to me. There was one girl, she like got down on her knees and was like cry praying. And I'm just like, take the fucking goggles off. Like, use your, if it's scaring you that bad, if it's really affecting you that bad, the one dude was just having a blast. He was laughing the whole time. But if it really affects you that bad, take the fucking virtual reality off, readjust your shit, and go, oh, okay, cool. Everything's cool. I'm not dead now. Good.
Yeah. I mean, the VR, I haven't tried it. I want to, but I don't have the money to do it. And then I'm not willing to just kind of go in and get PlayStation VR right off the bat. I really don't have really the interest in it. I guess the only game that would really get me interested in it is if they did like No Man's Sky in VR. That would be really neat to experience that. But you mentioned the Game Addicts podcast, and really what the first episode was us trying to feel our way through the episode. And, you know, I did a rundown like we do here, and
I liked it.
Yeah, I mean, no, it came off fine. But my only worry is that it sounded too much like other gaming podcasts, and that was not intentional. It wasn't set up to be that way. It's just when you listen to podcasts and you do podcasting, it's hard not to, you know, imitate.
Okay, I feel you. I mean, an imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, so.
Yeah, yeah.
In some regards, that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, well, right. But basically what I'm saying is that for episode two, I'm definitely working on the format a little bit. You know, basically we're going to try and make something that's going to sort of be our own. And then I might bring back random headlines for that and do random headlines on there.
Cool.
Like I've done on this podcast in the past, instead of taking like the biggest ones that we're going to talk about right now. And we will do that. You know, when there's big stuff to talk about, we will. But the thing is with this is that we also want to talk about and diverge and talk about modern and retro and, you know, collecting, which we're going to be doing a lot as well. And one topic that I saw today that made me wish we were recording that podcast today, because this would definitely be on there, is the Xbox 360 production has ended as of today.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah, no more.
2005, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, 2005 to in November of 2005 to April 2016, nearly 11 years, about 10, like 10 and a half.
That's crazy, man. Good run.
Yeah, quote from Phil Spencer, head of Xbox division at Microsoft. Xbox 360 means a lot to everyone at Microsoft, and while we've had an amazing run, the realities of manufacturing a product over a decade old are starting to creep up on us, which is why we have made the decision to stop manufacturing the new Xbox 360 consoles. We will continue to sell the existing inventory of 360 consoles with availability varying by country. And he went on to mention that existing 360 hardware will still be supported. We'll still be able to buy 360 games through the online store. Xbox Live services will remain active. Xbox One owners will still be able to play 360 games through backwards compatibility. Spencer also gave us a handful of stats, blah, 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 blah. 7 billion hours spent gaming on 360, with players gaining 486 billion gamer score points from 27 billion achievements. This is the end of an era, because the 360 was definitely the favorite by many during the seventh generation.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, I was never that guy. I really liked my Xbox 360, but I was more of a PlayStation guy myself. And I started that way, and I really sort of stayed that way because I never sold my PS3. I sold my 360.
Yep.
I got it back. I really like my 360. Both systems are great and have their strengths. But this is a sad day, but kind of knew it was coming, especially with them pushing so hard with backwards compatibility for the Xbox One, making that the only Xbox you really need. Where you can still play your 360 titles. I think there are up to 150 titles that you can play if you have the physical disc, or if you own them on your digital account, you can it'll just show up and you can download them from your download queue on the Xbox One. Also, that also counts any free games that they release on the Xbox 360. If you're a gold member, all you have to do is, if you don't have a 360, I think you can go onto the Xbox Store on your PC and redeem them. And then they will show up in your Xbox One download feed, because all the ones that are free on the Xbox are backwards compatible.
Oh, that's amazing.
And I kind of knew this was coming. It kind of happened sooner than I thought. I have the R2-D2 Slim model, and I at some point plan to get a regular Super Slim model to have as a backup. Essentially, I do kind of want to stop using my collector model. I mean, I want it to look pretty, but not overuse it and break it. But I want these consoles to last me a lifetime. You know, I want them to last, you know, for a while. And the fact that they are no longer producing anymore means that within the next year, I probably want to track down my new Xbox 360 and replace the one that I have, so I can still continue to enjoy this awesome library of games that I have. For it, as well as going forward. Now, I could, you know, for some of these games, I can do backwards compatibility, and that's just fine. But for a lot of them, they're never going to get that.
No, well, you would, and I mean, there were so many titles on 360, Brando. Mm-hmm. There's no way you could backwards compatibility all of them.
Right. Yeah, and I do not plan on going for a complete 360 collection. I don't really plan on going for a complete anything collection. Like, I guess the Virtual Boy would be the closest I would get. I don't even own one, but that's only because there's like 8 games in the U.S. that ever came out for it. And so that's somewhat doable, even though I think one of them is pretty expensive. But it, needless to say, I think the PS2 went for 13 years.
Damn.
It went from 2000, which it was launched in January of 2000, I think. I don't know. I don't think they did a worldwide launch for the PS2. I think it was either January or March of 2000 in Japan to January of 13 is when they quit making PS2s. And then now about 13 years. And then now 10 and a half for the Xbox 360. One of the best consoles ever released, the Xbox 360, is now on its way out completely. It'll leave store shelves. That probably means a diminishing software, so you'll be seeing less and less 360 games on the market at your local stores, and they're going to be replaced with the current stuff. And
does that mean now's the time to sell 360 games, Brando?
Well, I mean, okay, the market is going cheaper and cheaper right now for the Xbox stuff. I mean, I guarantee you there might be some stuff going on, but there's also going to be I'm not sure if this is the right time for you to sell, because I think for games you're going to be getting the lesser amount.
Gotcha.
But if you're a buyer, now is the time to start striking. That's what I've been doing with the PS3 and like the 360. I think for both Resistance 1 and 2, I think I pay like $5.
Hell yeah.
And then Resistance 3 is like $5 itself. I mean, I don't even remember when the last time I spent over $10. I just saw Lost Odyssey. Do you remember that game?
I have Lost Odyssey, yeah.
Hey, that game is like $8 now.
Damn.
So, I mean, now is the time to strike. I mean, the fact that, you know, everybody has been selling their 360 PS3 stuff to upgrade is there's now an abundance of stuff in the market. And so if you want to get into that, it hasn't reached its lowest yet, but it's definitely getting lower and lower, and to the point where it's a really cheap thing to collect. Like even like honestly, the best thing to collect right now for gaming is original Xbox. Like there's only a few titles that are like really expensive, and even like some of the more rare games, like you have Fatal Frame 2 on the original Xbox. I found that for $20 recently.
I have that.
And then the Guy game, as awful as that game is, if you're going for an Xbox collection for a complete one, you know, that's a game that you need to get for a complete North American set, $20.
Damn.
Dude, that's not expensive. I mean, that's a rare game. You know, Panzer Dragoon Orta, I don't think that's rare at all, actually. But I don't see it very often. And dude, like right now, that's like $12.
Damn. Well,
There are like, okay, Star Wars Battlefront 2. I don't know why that game is like 30 to $40, but damn that. Even that's not too bad, really. When you start looking at the whole picture of things, when you start thinking about affordability, the PS2 is also sort of the same way. It's, you know, stuff on that's still pretty cheap. And if you want to get into retro games, that's where I would start.
hell yeah. All right. Well, like we were saying, Brando, make sure to check out the Game Addicts podcast on the Journey into Comics YouTube. You guys are great. I loved that first episode. Looking forward to more. I will say, as we close up here, I have a little bit of a late breaking update.
I do too.
This is from Ben Kreger.
Oh,
This is
then
45 minutes ago.
mine has nothing to do with that at all.
Okay, so he posts, "It's been pretty exciting. We broke $1,000 in the first 24 hours, and they're nearing $1,400 already, 22%." And they feel that he says that he's finally feeling like they're going to make this comic after a 20-year-long wait.
That's awesome.
So
Congrats, guys. I
congrats
really
to
hope
those
to.
guys. Make sure to go to their Kickstarter. Go to fund.blacksuitofdeath.com to check that out. Brandon, late breaking news you had?
All right, so we talked about the next episode of Game Addicts podcast, right?
Yep.
That will be up on YouTube. We're set to record it next week, so it'll probably go up on the first week of May. But for all you guys that listen to this podcast, I'm going to put it here as an extra bonus episode. You don't even have to go check that out. You can see if you like the podcast. If you're into gaming stuff that we talk about, check it out here to see if you want to take that extra step to go check it out on YouTube. Episode 2 of the Game Addicts podcast will be right here on this feed on the Journey to Comics podcast.
I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. And as always, next week, Brandon, or well, actually, a couple days from now, we're going to have some guests arrive. They're going to be here, and they're going to be, well, they're not going to be here, but they're going to be on air with us. We're going to be talking about their Kickstarter, Gray Bear Comics, their Kickstarter for their comic book, See No Evil Number One. Ben Krieger is actually the penciler or the no, he's the letterer for that comic as
Did you say
well.
See No Evil?
Speak No Evil, sorry.
How dare you speaketh?
I didn't speaketh the right evil. I saw the wrong evil.
He did.
But yeah, that should be exciting, Brandon. I'm looking forward to seeing you on Saturday or on Sunday.
You don't know what's going on.
I'm very hungry. I'm finding myself to like become a little ravenous with appetite, so
Oh, yeah, I'm really excited for my chili cheese fries.
Oh, well, that's exciting. Well, let's get to those. As always, check out Journey into Comics on all our different social medias, YouTube, Facebook at Journey into Comics Podcast. Look us up on Twitter at JIC Podcast. We're doing things with our Twitter now, by the way, folks. You can actually, you know, see stuff there. And I think that's gonna do it for this week at Journey into Comics. Oh, check us out on Instagram at Journey into Comics. Is there anything else, Brando?
Chili cheese fries.
Chili cheese fries. Let's take care. All right. Well, I'm Nate.
I'm Brando.
This was Journey into Comics. Thanks for listening, guys.